It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, I got a question, and I'm not trying to be funny, okay? I legitimately want to ask this question because what I saw yesterday is the same thing I saw the year before. It's the same thing I saw the year before, and so on and so on. Stoke Joey Chestnut ate 74 hot dogs yesterday.
Did he? Has he? I thought there was one year that he got beat.
He has gotten beat.
Yeah, that was a couple years ago.
Was that by
right?
Kobayashi?
It was by Matt Stoney.
Matt Stoney.
Yes.
All right. So we have
the legend himself.
We have our resident competitive eater, Big Sexy, in the house because I wanted him to be involved with this. But Stoke, let me ask you first. Not trying to be funny. Is Joey Chestnut an athlete?
No.
Tell me why.
I don't put eating hot dogs as athletic competition. I don't know. Big Sexy's looking over there at me like, hey, he's like, what are you saying? Am I wrong, Big Sexy?
Hold on. Before Big Sexy weighs in, because he and I just had a brief conversation.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I just want to let you know where I'm coming from, and I'm not being funny. I have three factors I'm looking at. Is this a competition? Is he an athlete? Is he competing against others? Check.
Yes.
Is it physically taxing? Check.
Yes.
Is there a scoreboard? Check.
So you're saying, yes, he is an athlete.
I did not used to think so. But if we're going to quantify a jockey as an athlete, is a jockey an athlete?
Yes, absolutely.
He's riding another athlete. It's physically taxing for him, sure. He's trying to compete against others. Yes, check. Is there a scoreboard and a winner? Check.
Is there practice time?
Of course.
You know, I might have to change my point of view on this, but I'm going to hold out and let Big Sexy chime in here.
I really don't have to say much because Zach just sold everybody on what was going on because he's absolutely right. You do have to train yourself to be able to intake 74 hot dogs. The most I've ever done is 22 hot dogs and buns. So I'm in 10 minutes. I'm nowhere near what Chestnut is doing. In fact, I'm the table enders. I'm the ones that you didn't hear about at the results at the end of the contest. So I'll say that, yeah, we're competitive eaters are athletes, and I know the text line is going to blow up. I want to go back and read this up. But based off of what you are saying and the pure definition of what Merriam-Webster is even saying about athlete, a person who is proficient in sports and other forms of physical exercise.
Mm. All right, Merriam.
And you're saying eating hot dogs isn't exercise. It's an exercise if you're trying to eat as many hot dogs as you can in 10 minutes.
It's different. You know, when you think of an athlete, you're thinking of the major sports. But when you read the definition and you take a step back and you think about, I mean, the training that goes into this, right? Because, I mean, these guys don't just wake up and just say, you know what, I'm going to go eat hot dogs today and then go sit back down for two more weeks and do nothing. I mean, there's a training process to get yourself
every
to
day.
That level.
What does that look like?
Yeah, what does that look like?
It's not pretty.
Wow,
so
can't be pretty.
What are we doing? Is it like...
Well, okay, I'll use Kobayashi as an example. He had the ability to go to a buffet and they would cook rice up for him and he would do rice balls and he would eat a lot of sushi and this, that, and the other and cabbage and that would naturally expand in his stomach when he drinks water. Now, Chestnut and everybody like that, they use the water method, which, you know, you do what you can do. That's the water method.
Okay.
Okay. Someone says, it's a competition. This is on the RamosLaw.com text line. Hit us up, 303-713-1043. You can also give us a call on that same number, 303-713-1043. It says, it's a competition, but not an athletic competition. Kind of like darts or chess.
So how would you get better at this competition?
You got to do it.
You have to do it.
You got to practice.
And it involves putting your body through extraneous testing and training and test runs and how much capacity can I build up this week compared to last week?
So
I know,
are dart throwers and those athletes are
I think,
the
I
chess
think so.
Masters, chess players, are they
I think,
athletes?
I think darts that's how, for sure. Darts is coordination, sure, hand-eye, right. practice.
Yes.
There's a real scoreboard because it's inherently what the game is, a scoreboard, and you're competing against another guy. Chess?
It's the same things that we were talking about eating. I mean, you're practicing.
You are practicing.
You're
competing against another.
Right. You're keeping score. I mean, there's a winner, there's a loser. So, you know, where do you draw the line, I think, is ultimately, do you just throw everybody in
there? Did you see what came on right after the hot dog contest on ESPN2?
I did not.
The World Cornhole Championships.
Those guys. Oh, my God. I love watching that.
I've never watched cornhole
It just started playing. ESPN just picked it up, like, within the last couple months. It is incredible.
Is it?
It is phenomenal. Remember what I did last year to you in cornhole?
Watch your lips. I made you come back to Bearcat Gym's, what was it, Memorial Day party?
Yeah,
Day party, and you got
I was
your
trying
butt
to leave.
Beat down.
I was in my
you
car
got
leaving.
Beat down.
You were pleading for me to come back because right. I was unfocused and one foot out the door.
Well, it is what it is, but you did get beat down, right?
I did. It was bad. Right. It was bad.
Whenever you want a rematch, you let me know.
Okay.
Maybe
okay.
we can get Jay Love to video it or something, and we can put it out there for everybody to view.
Before we let you go, Big Sexy, 74 hot dogs. Is that the most impressive piece of competitive eating that you've ever seen?
Oh, without a doubt. It's a world record in hot dogs. It beat his old record by, I believe, one. He did 73 or 73 and a half in a qualifier. He just has fun and does these exhibitions at qualifiers around the country just to have test runs with that amount of hot dogs with people actually cooking them. So, no, I think it's great, and I don't know. The bad part about it is everybody thinks that Chestnut is just absolutely destroying the circuit. There are other contests that we do compete in. You know, there's a taco contest in conjunction with the Fresno Grizzlies, Fresno Tacos, that the hats that I walk
fun.
Around here. Yeah, it's
how many tacos can you eat?
Not many. Not right now. And that has to do with me being out of eating shape
right.
because, I mean, you give me a couple weeks, and if I took it seriously, I don't know. I've never done a taco contest before.
Well, I was at the golf course yesterday, and they had a barbecue buffet. And I went through the line two times, and I got me some ribs, some steak, you know, all this good. Like, how many times could you go through a buffet like that?
I mean, I double fist plates when I go through a buffet okay. line, so I'll go probably twice.
Twice, two full plates,
and I'll be good to go.
Locked and loaded.
You can't eat every day like you're a competitive eater, or you'll be 464 pounds like I used to be.
So what does today look like for Joey Chestnut?
Hopefully it's a day of recovery, but he's probably out doing a bunch of media. I mean, today is he'll probably do
sure,
the Today Show.
Sure.
So he was up bright and early on NBC. I mean, he does ESPN. He has that media tour. So here the next week, he doesn't get to go
home. Physically.
What
does it look like for Joey Chestnut today?
Well, we have the eater party afterwards, so it's, you know.
Does he throw up, do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Wow. Do you want to digest 74 hot dogs?
Good
Heck,
God.
I didn't want to digest 22 hot dogs and buns when I ate that.
What kind of practice goes into that? You know, is practice runs.
I mean, yeah. I'm sure Joey goes through hundreds and hundreds of hot dogs, but he'll find a restaurant that does, you know, they'll cook the hot dogs up and everything like that, and he'll just do practice run after practice run.
Leading up to the competition, do you go 2 days without eating, or do you just
I go 24 hours.
Okay.
I like to about 24 hours before the contest, make sure I'm clear and ready to go.
All right. Hey, Zach, I want you to start getting into that.
Okay.
I want you to start doing that.
Okay.
Now, hold on. Now, let me put this out there really quick. The ladies' competition was beforehand, and
Mickey Sudo. She ate 41 hot dogs.
In order to qualify for that, you have to be a female, and you have to be able to eat 10 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes to get a free trip to New York City. Not that I'm saying women need to get into the sport, but it's a free trip to New York City.
Right.
They put you up in a really cool hotel in Manhattan, you know, the type where you push zero on the phone and the operator pops up. You're like, yes, Mr. Beard, how can I help you? I'm telling you, it's a pretty sweet deal.
Well, there you go.
The ladies actually have a pretty cool opportunity to take that trip as well.
To this show, so.
Yeah. They have the ability to take that trip as well. So, you know.
Thank you very much, Big Sexy.
That
might have
been the best radio we've ever done right there.
It's up there. Send it in for a Peabody.
CBA.
Thanks, Big Sexy.
You got
Appreciate
it.
You, buddy.
Appreciate it. Good stuff. Fascinating. And by the way, the guy that introduces these guys, the guy that introduces the hot dog eaters is like, he belongs in professional wrestling.
He's the leader of Major League Eating. Him and his brother was doing commentary with Amin I don't know the, it was, it used to be Paul Page. I don't know the.
Well, he sounds like Paul Heyman when he's introducing these guys.
Right. Well, his name is George Shea. Him and his brother Rich are the actual leaders and founders of Major League Eating. So
I love it.
They're the leaders of the circus.
Stoke, one of your most notorious moments can't happen anymore. Do we miss the suspense? We'll explain what we're talking about when we come back. Stoke, one of your most notorious moments can't happen anymore. Do you miss the suspense or not?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about rookies not signing their contracts.
Ah, the good old days when I held out for
the good
a day.
Old days. The good. Oh, it was just a day?
Day or two. I don't remember. I think it might have. Yeah, I don't even remember. It's so long ago. But I did. It was day or two. That was it.
It wasn't like something that was carrying on at all.
No. It was a situation where it's like, okay, well, I'm, you know, left out here in the cold and everybody else is signing and I got to get into training camp.
Right. Oh, so, but in terms of the timeline leading up to camp, when was it? It was right before or was, shouldn't it have been done right after the draft?
Well, I went through the off season and everything, and then I hadn't signed my contract. You know, you had a pool of money, and the Ravens that year is a little bit different because they traded their second and third round pick, and so they just had their number one pick, and they had two fourth rounders, me, and then Edwin Mulatalo, who they drafted after me, and then they had a couple picks after that. And that was it. So I don't know what happened with their pool of money, but they gave it all to the first rounder, I guess. So they didn't have enough to give what we were supposed to get in the fourth round, so we had to do different deals, and I wasn't going to sign that contract. And so I ended up holding out in the training camp, and a couple of days went by, and then I ended up signing the contract.
The same one that you wouldn't sign, or did they give you a small bump? Or?
Well, it was pretty much the same one.
Pretty much the same one. You're like, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, not going to do this. Yeah. You called my bluff. I'll be there.
Okay, I'm coming. Where do I sign? Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. Appreciate you letting me sign this awful contract. Thank you.
Wait, but first of all, did you view it as a bad contract still now?
Oh, yeah, it was awful. It was awful.
Even still looking back at it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't get my signing bonus. I had to earn most of my signing bonus.
Right, with the receptions.
No, with the playing time.
Oh, with the play. Oh, no,
with the playing
with the snaps,
time.
The number of snaps.
Yes.
Or was it like percentage of snaps?
Yes, percentage of offensive snaps.
That is, Stoke, I find that fascinating because we're talking about the National Football League. We're talking about professional football, not in 1950. You know, this was, what, 1999?
Yep.
So this is 1999. And they put a clause in your, well, not a clause, it was your signing bonus, but you had to earn it really by participating in 70% of the snaps. But you are going back and looking at the film and breaking down your snaps, right?
Yeah, I'm counting all my snaps because first year didn't get it, second year didn't get it, and third year was either all or nothing. I had to get it that year. And I was starting the season, and I ended up getting it. But, yeah, I'm in there counting, okay, how many plays did we have this game? Okay, we had 85, and I played in 60 of them, all right. And then I would add them up every single week.
Now, and it's for the season, right, in totality?
Yeah.
So did you start to begin like, all right, how many do I need to play moving forward to get this thing?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. And, like, any kind of scrap time at the end of a game or something, and because I went from starter, I banged up my knee, so I went from being the starter to being more of the third wide, so then obviously your reps, your plays get cut down a lot.
Sure.
But any kind of scraps I could get, I was always wanting to go out there. If they kneel down,
the helmet
all
stayed
that counts.
On. Yeah.
All that counts. Kneel downs is a play.
Is that right?
So if you're in victory formation, quarterback takes a knee, that's a play. So any kind of play like that, or if the game's in hand here in the last couple minutes and you're up by, you know, whatever, and you're running the clock out, let me get in there. I want to go block. I'll go block. You know, and coaches at that time, they don't really care. You can go in there, give a guy a break or something. And so, yeah, I mean, I was trying to get out there any chance I could.
That is too, I mean, I'm going to say it's too funny, but it's really not.
Right. I mean, that was the situation I was in, and I felt like the signing bonus was a signing bonus. Everybody was slotted at that time. You knew pretty much what you were going to get. I didn't get what I was supposed to get. Now, in the end, I ended up getting a little bit more, but I had to wait 3 years for it, and I had a lot of stress go into it.
How did you get more if you didn't, hit your incentives?
That was the caveat of signing that deal was like, look, we got to do it this way, but if you end up getting it, you'll get a little bit more than what you would have got if you just – sign the contract, what you were slotted for.
So you have to go earn it. You have to go earn it. And if you do, we'll give you a little bit more than you were supposed to get originally if we just gave it to you.
Right.
Okay. Well,
but it was awful. I can't believe I signed that thing. I wish I would have never signed it. It was an awful, awful contract. And it was, but I was stuck in a bad spot. I was a fourth round pick. I didn't have any leverage.
Right.
So what it was is me and the other fourth round pick were going to kind of try to stick together.
Right.
And he ended up buckling and he signed. And then I'm sitting there out in the cold by myself, like, I don't know what to do here. What's going on? And finally, like, okay, I just got to sign the contract.
Did you have a verbal agreement with the other?
No, no,
it was
no.
Between the agents?
Yeah, I mean, my agent was like, just as long as y'all stick together and hopefully he doesn't sign, then, you know, we might be able to get something done here when you have both your fourth-round picks not reporting, right?
Right.
So the only guy in camp was a first-rounder, and you got your two fourth-rounders not, you know, participating. Maybe a little pressure comes on the team then, but whenever one of them goes and you just got one guy from Southwest Louisiana holding out,
we can do
whatever. He's not going to do anything for us this year anyway. So I was in a bad spot, Zach. I was in a bad spot, and I signed it, and to this day I wish I didn't. I wish I would have just held tight and not signed that contract because it was an awful contract and I shouldn't have signed it.
What?
But at that time you're a young 22, 23-year-old kid, and
yeah,
you're just like, okay, I'll do it, whatever. I got it, you know. You kind of feel like you're just sitting out there while camp's going on. You're not sure how the NFL works and all this stuff, so a lot of anxiety and stress, and it's like, okay, just get it done. I want to go and start practicing.
So there was no signing bonus for you.
I got a little bit.
Oh, you did get a little bit. Okay.
A little bit. Not anywhere close to what I was supposed to get.
But you didn't get your first NFL check until when?
Well, I got it then when I got my signing bonus, and then first week of the season when you're playing.
Okay. So it's after the first week of the actual week one of the NFL season.
That's when you start getting your game checks, you know, your salary checks. Now, you'll make some per diem and all your workout checks and stuff like that. But when you start making your salary is when the season starts.
When we talk about NFL contracts, how would you feel if there was a fundamental shift in the way that the NFL did business? We have a suggestion, and I want to bounce it off you, the listener, next. All right, Stoke, as we look at the way that NFL contracts are structured, there was an interesting article from Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio's website through NBC Sports, that it was talking about fully guaranteed contracts in the NFL, but shorter deals. Okay, and you and I were just having a conversation about rookie contracts and you holding out for a little bit and a fascinating story. Very interesting. If you missed it, you can hit us up, all of our content on demand on our podcast, on the app, the Fan app. So easy.
I just kind of rambled through it. We never even got to the point.
What was the point?
I think the point was you don't see that anymore.
Right.
We just never got to it. I just kept rambling the whole time. So that was the point. You don't get to see the holdouts anymore. I wish you did. I liked having holdouts. It gave you something to talk about. It was interesting. And I kind of missed that a little bit. It's just kind of like, okay, that guy signed. We know he's going to sign. You don't have any fear of the holdout. I don't know. It was interesting for me.
Well, that being said, you know, since you just mentioned that, within the top 10 draft picks of the NFL, 7 are unsigned.
Is there any concern with you that, oh, man, this thing's going to linger halfway through the year, or this thing's going to linger a month into training camp? With me, it's like, nope, we saw Joey Bosa in his situation a couple years ago, and that's been like the longest holdout in a while. Ever since this new CBA got signed, you just don't see the cases like you used to see with these guys that would hold out for long periods of time.
Yeah, you look at Sam Darnold. Not signed. Denzel Ward, not signed. Roquan Smith, not signed. Mike McGlinchey, Baker Mayfield, Saquon Barkley, all not signed. My gut tells me that one of them will drag on.
I hope so. I like it. I mean, if you're Saquon Barkley, you got a lot of leverage. Baker Mayfield, I think Saquon Barkley has more leverage than Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's not counting on to start right now.
Right.
So they can say, okay, well, we don't need him right away. Now, obviously, you'd like to have all your guys in camp, young guys, especially quarterbacks. But a guy like Saquon Barkley, they want him in camp now. They need production from him this year, right away, game one. So he has a lot of leverage.
I agree. And maybe
as is most of these first-rounders, but some a little bit more than others. I mean, you look at a guy like Mike McGlinchey, who 49ers are probably counting on to start this year.
There's no doubt.
And do you want your tackle missing practice time?
Absolutely not.
You don't get a lot of it.
Do you think one will drag out?
I hope so.
I honestly hope so, too. And with the Bosa thing, yeah, that went into training camp. And he had an injury, I think, at the time. Or maybe he came.
Hamstring, yeah.
Yeah.
And
that was, talking about signing bonus and offset language. And
yeah.
But would you, and speaking to this article from Pro Football Talk, it details, how it would go down, if it were to go down. The shorter deals but fully guaranteed contracts. And the conversation is spurred because of the annual NBA free agency talk. And that how you have these guys, getting these, fully guaranteed contracts, B players getting paid like NFL A-listers with all guaranteed money. And
he had 11 guys on the team. That's it. Right? 12 yep. guys, that's yep. it. So yep. and some of those back end guys in NBA, their contracts aren't guaranteed. They go, they're in the D League, then they jump up and they get the 2 week contracts, right?
Yep.
So, it's different in the NBA. And I think NFL players need to realize that you don't have a lot of players in the NBA. And only a select few are making that kind of money. And yeah, you do have B players making that type of money. But in the NFL, if you want to go down guaranteed contract where they're all fully guaranteed, if you want to go down that road, I think, like you said, you will be looking at a lot shorter contracts. So instead of these four-year deals, a lot of guys will just be signing one-year deals because teams don't want to risk it. If you have any kind of injury history, they're going to be a lot shorter contracts. And the money just, I think, will be a lot less. And you'll have a select few, like we saw with Kirk Cousins. So the quarterbacks will scoop up all the money. All the top-tier guys, yeah, they'll get taken care of. But the middle-of-the-road guys, they're going to be the ones that suffer when you talk about guaranteed contracts, because you're going to see a lot of 1 year deals and right. a lot of 2 year deals. And I think owners will just draw the line. A select few will get the big deals and, 4 or 5 year, maybe fully guaranteed. But the rest, the 90% of the other players are the ones that are going to be looking at this as something that hurts them in the long run. I think it's a good situation the way it is. And then on top of that, you're going to look at situations to where guys are changing teams a lot more than what we see now. Because the contracts are so short, you're going to see a lot of one-year deals.
Could that be a good thing?
I don't think so.
No?
You'll see play suffer.
Because there's less continuity?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going from one team to the next team to the next team and you're getting a lot of turnover every single year, the quality of football is going to suffer because of that.
Well, a piece from this Pro Football Talk article in relation to shorter contracts but fully guaranteed money, a potential shift down the road. They say, quote, with fully guaranteed contracts, some players, mainly franchise quarterbacks, would possibly be able to leverage 5 or 6 year fully guaranteed contracts. But what if the player is no longer justifying his pay? Teams would be required to continue to devote cash and cap space to players who aren't carrying his weight. That's the NBA.
Yeah. That's Major League Baseball.
Right? And Major League Baseball.
Albert Pujols making, $500 million a year, and he's 50 years old, and he can't run. He's not the same player. But, hey, it's baseball.
It's baseball.
You sign him to a bad contract, you're going to pay the price those last couple of years. I mean, we talked about it with Charlie Blackmon a few weeks ago, hoping that's not the case with him in a few years. But you look at some of these deals, and these guys get older, and they're not the same players, but it's fully guaranteed, and that's part of that process.
Right. It's a fascinating conversation. My gut tells me it's never going to happen in the NFL.
I agree. I agree with you. It's just a sport with so much. You have a lot of turnover. You have so many players on the roster. I think if you did something like that, the bulk of the players would get hurt by it. You're going to sign a lot shorter deals, and I think in the end, your money will actually go down. Instead of signing these five-year contracts where you have 2 years of fully guaranteed money and then teams can, they have the luxury to hold on to you if you're playing well. And if you don't, if you're not playing well, then they can release you. I think the system is pretty good for football. I mean, what I'd like to see, fully guaranteed contracts, yeah, that would be pretty cool. But in the football system, the NFL system, with so many guys on the roster, I think what would actually happen, it would hurt 90% of the players. The top 10%, Aaron Rodgers and Julio Jones, Antonio Bryant, yeah, they'll make out good. They'll be fine. And they'll probably, their contracts would be better than what they are now. But 90% of the NFL players would actually suffer from fully guaranteed contracts, a lot shorter contracts, and teams not taking as much risk.
And it's interesting you mentioned Julio because they have their own thing going on right now in Atlanta between the franchise and Julio Jones. And it talks about it in this article. It says, quote, if the Falcons had been required to give Jones a fully guaranteed deal, the team likely wouldn't have committed to six seasons. And while some players may prefer the certainty and security that comes from four or five or six fully guaranteed years, it's better to have three guaranteed years only. It's better to have three guaranteed years only than three guaranteed years followed by three non-guaranteed years, since the player will be either underpaid and out of luck, like Julio Jones, or overpaid and out of a job, like Dolphins D-tackle Ndamukong Suh, when the final 3 years of the deal arrive. And you can sort of look at that with C.J. Anderson, you know, who's got a similar situation. And is DT coming DT doesn't have guaranteed money after next year, I don't think.
Right. I think this is the last year of his guaranteed money, just like Emmanuel Sanders. And we talked a lot about Emmanuel Sanders earlier in the week, and he understands his situation, you know, his comments, and yep. I had no problem, no issue with his comments at all, but he understands his situation. Whenever your cap number gets high and your salary gets high and none of it's guaranteed,
there you go.
You're probably moving on unless you have a great, great, great year.
Bradley Chubb, not the best defensive rookie? According to one very popular medium, that statement is correct. And we'll explain next.
There's never an off season for talking Broncos.
To me, Von Miller has got to play more disciplined football. He can't be one of the top players in the league as far as jumping off sides is concerned. He's got to be better at staying on sides.
Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Zach here. Enjoying the great outdoors this summer? I hope you are. Make sure that you don't leave your wood-fired flavor behind. Traeger, how about this? They just released two new portable grills, the Ranger and the Scout. And they let you take some amazing wood-fired flavor you enjoy in your backyard anywhere you go. Whether you're fishing and want to make a quick and tasty lunch, or at the campground with the whole family, you'll be able to enjoy Traeger's amazing versatility and ease of use. Slow smoke a rack of ribs on the Ranger, or grill up classic burgers and dogs on the Scout and enjoy a real meal full of amazing hardwood flavor. You might have to compromise on a soft bed when you're out there in the great outdoors, but never compromise on taste. Shop the new Ranger and the new Scout Traeger grills at your local dealers by visiting TraegerGrills.com/dealers. Bradley Chubb, not the best defensive rookie? Question mark. According to one very popular medium, that is in fact correct. It is this time of year, Stoke.
I thought he was the best defender in the draft. What are you talking about?
Not according to Madden 19 rookie rankings. Yes.
That's where we're going.
Yes. The Bible on football ratings. The same outlet that gave my partner Stokely an awareness of 77.
That hurts.
Still stings after all these years. Yes. It has to.
Give me whatever you want on everything else, but awareness has to be.
Right.
What's the most you can get? Is it 100?
99?
99? Does anybody ever get 100? Well, then I should have been a 99.
Should have.
Awareness of 99. You know, speed, 30, agility, 40. All that other stuff could be very low, but
awareness, 99.
Awareness, very high.
Glue guy, 99. Locker room guy, 99.
Yes.
Coach on the field, 99.
There we go.
Sneaky athlete, 99.
Hands, you know.
Right. Well, Madden 19 rookie ratings came out, okay? And I looked at the top five defensive players. They do not have Bradley Chubb at number one. They have him at as an 80 overall. And obviously, we're having fun here. These are arbitrary rankings. But they do try to project as best as possible. This is big business. Really, the definition of it, video game every year does so well, Stoke. But they have Bradley Chubb at number two, really tied for second with two other players with an 80 overall rating. They have the middle linebacker from the Chicago Bears, formerly of the Georgia Bulldogs, Roquan Smith, as the highest rated defensive rookie in the Madden video game. Did Chubb get slighted, Stoke?
We'll see.
It's very important.
We'll see. But, you know, when you were saying that, I got to thinking about Roquan Smith. And, You know, he was kind of overlooked a little bit and fell to, where did he go, 8, 9, 10, somewhere to the
Bears.
Yeah,
he was
but
right there.
He might be one of those guys where we look back and say, that was a steal of the draft. That guy is a...
You loved him.
Yeah, I mean, that guy's a Ray Lewis type of linebacker, you know, because he's a three-down linebacker. He can play the pass. He's great against the run. And he's just that type of linebacker that teams need in today's NFL, because he is fast enough to cover guys in space, and he is tough enough to stuff the run. So a guy like Roquan Smith, you know, we could look back on and say, man, we could have had him at 5.
I hope that that's not the case.
I hope it's not the case either, but I think you look at that type of player, and a lot of teams could kick themselves for passing on him.
Sure.
Is what I'm trying to say here.
Plop him in the middle of your defense? What does that look like in 3 years?
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, we say, hey, well, we got a great one in Bradley Chubb, so it doesn't matter in our situation, but that guy turned out to be special.
Well, they have him, and it's interesting to see that, you know, their Roquan Smith is, and of course, it's an arbitrary rating by Madden, for Madden 19. They have Roquan Smith right there at number one. We often talk, or I should say occasionally talk, about what franchises identify with. Here in Denver, it's the quarterback position, right? But then you look at the Bears, and there's Roquan Smith in the middle of that defense, like Brian Urlacher, like Dick Butkus. And if he turns out to be the guy, he'll be the face of that franchise.
One more. Iron Mike Singletary.
Oh, there's another one. Of course, how can I forget?
I mean, those three, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, they're known for their linebacker play. And you could throw him in the mix, too. So we'll see how it plays out for him. But obviously, look, he's got all the talent in the world. So to have him he's ranked number one on Madden as far as defensive players, and you got
Bradley Chubb is number two, but he's really tied with two other defensive players. One we heard a lot about leading up to the draft because this was Big Al's guy, and before we brought in Suah Cravens, he had suggested time and time again that the Broncos draft Florida State's Derwin James.
Guy's a special player. The Chargers got an absolute steal with him.
What did you like about him so much?
He's just a great player. I mean, he's a safety that I don't know why he fell so far, but Big Al is spot on with him. And, what was the reasoning that he fell to where he fell to with the Chargers? And you put him on that defense, this guy's a special player, and he's going to be a game changer for them.
He was picked 17th overall, to your point. You know, he was talked about. We saw him. Even in the week or two leading up to the draft, we saw him in the top 10. Interesting, but the Chargers, look, we're probably going to have to look at Derwin James at a minimum of 2 years for the next 10. I mean, he is... With the back end, yeah, 2 games minimum over the next 10 years. And they already have some legitimate pieces on the back end of their defense. The Chargers do.
Yeah, they do. They do. And they might have got the steal of the draft.
The other defensive player that is tied with the Madden 19 rating of Bradley Chubb is Denzel Ward, who, of course, went 4th overall to the Cleveland Browns, allowing the Broncos to select Bradley Chubb at 5. But the other guy who made the list in the top 5 is another player we heard a lot about, the Broncos potentially grabbing him if they did the trade with Buffalo, and that's Vita Vea. The defensive tackle out of Washington who eventually got picked by the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yes.
And that was the guy that we spotted and said, okay, if you're going to move back and you're going to do this deal with Buffalo, you're going to have 2 first-round picks, maybe it's, you know, Vita Vea and Sony Michel whoever we were talking about at the time. Take that for what it's worth. But when it comes to the offensive players in the Madden rookie ratings 2019 version, they came out with the top 5 receivers, okay? Number 1 on this list.
So is this for rookies or is this for everybody
now?
Nope,
just for rookies.
For rookies, receivers.
Just
I got to remember what receivers were drafted. I know the kid out of Maryland, DJ Moore,
He is number 1
okay.
on the list. DJ Moore, who played with 3 different quarterbacks this past year and still somehow, if my memory serves me correctly, set the all-time reception record at Maryland this past year. He's number 1 on the list.
And I don't remember any other ones besides Cortland Sutton.
Yes, you do, because the other guy tied with him at the top just signed his contract today,
I
believe.
No, I don't, or I would say I remember him.
You do.
Well, maybe you do.
I believe in you. He signed with the Atlanta Falcons today.
Oh, the kid from Alabama.
Calvin Ridley.
Calvin Ridley. Gotcha.
He's there. When it comes to the top five, we do have a guy, and that's Courtland Sutton. On the top five Madden rookie ratings 2019,
number
Courtland
four?
Sutton is fourth overall.
Good.
Correct.
He has a chance to make a big impact this year. I hope he can stay healthy, and it's going to be fun to watch. You know, training camp, you go in there with storylines every single year, and Courtland Sutton obviously is a big one this year, along with DeSean Hamilton.
Sure.
Along with Isaiah McKenzie now I'm forgetting the other guy's name from Louisiana Tech now.
Carlos Henderson.
Carlos Henderson. Along with, you know, to watch those guys and see from year one to year two how the you know, Carlos Henderson, Isaiah McKenzie progress, and then watch the two rookies now. Look, a lot of hype around those guys. They had a great offseason, but can they continue it through training camp?
I got to tell you, I feel pretty good that, and again, just to repeat, because someone will, you know, assault us on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, they're putting too much stock in this. We're just talking about it. It's a fun conversation. These Madden 19 rookie ratings, I got to tell you, I do feel a little bit optimistic that we have our guy, Bradley Chubb, ranked second in terms of the best defensive players in this rookie class, and we have a receiver ranked in the top five of this rookie class as well.
It's got great potential to be a really good draft class. It really does. You know, you were going through that list and you're saying who Bradley Chubb was tied with, Denzel Ward. And you look at the Browns and passing on Bradley Chubb and taking Denzel Ward. And you look back in a couple years, we'll see how it turns out for them. But if Bradley Chubb turns out to be a dominant pass rusher, and they passed on that guy, and Denzel Ward doesn't turn out to be what they think he's going to be.
I mean,
that could be such a huge, huge mistake when you look at having a guy like Bradley Chubb and Myles Garrett on the bookends for the next whatever amount of years rushing the quarterback, and you passed up on that opportunity if you're the Cleveland Browns. I know people are saying, well, that's what Cleveland does. I got you, but you had a chance to get two premium bookend pass rushers in back-to-back drafts, and also maybe find your quarterback, and then you passed up on that guy and you took a cornerback. We'll see how it plays out in the next couple years.
Oh, man, stoked.
This thing, but it could be a monumental mistake if Bradley Chubb turns out to be the pass rusher and the player that a lot of people think he's going to be.
But let's just go here. Let's just go here that if Denzel Ward turns out to be a great cornerback, and Bradley Chubb turns out to be a great pass rusher, okay? And I don't even want to define him with a specific position.
Sure.
If they turn out to be both the best versions of themselves, wouldn't you rather have the pass rusher?
Well, I think in their situation, they'd rather have the cornerback. That's why they took him. Because they believe Myles Garrett's going to be a really good pass rusher. And they have somebody on the opposite side of Myles Garrett that they are high on also. So if Denzel Ward turns out to be a really good player, I think they're very happy with their pick because of the situation they're in and because they drafted a defensive end the year before.
Right, right. Okay. I can go with you there. I think in time we'll say, so glad we got our guy. That's what I feel like.
We're glad they passed on him.
We're so glad that the Browns went Browns and we got Bradley Chubb and he's going to be here for a decade. Someone is asking, hey, can you give us the rating? Courtland Sutton's rating was 75 overall, which was fourth. After DJ Moore from Maryland, who's now on the Panthers, Calvin Ridley from Alabama, who's now on the Falcons, then it was Dante Pettis, ranked right before Courtland Sutton. Pettis was played at Washington in the Pac-12.
Who drafted him?
He got drafted by the San Francisco 49ers. Yes. Yeah, by the 49ers.
What prompted that?
Where was the context for Tom Brady asking his son? Oh, what did Tom get as a rating?
We are waiting to hear where those ratings are. I was the same way. I'm like, why did that come in there?
Right.
Are we just throwing that in there now every show?
It's just like, oh, come on.
Not necessary.
Kidding?
We got you. Got to realize it's going to be followed up with that. And he did give us a little bit of leeway there, so we could brace ourselves for us. But it still takes it catches me off guard.
And if you don't understand those sound clips, good.
Right,
you're better off that you don't.
And if you want to, just Google Tom Brady. Tom
makes out with son.
Makes out with. There you go. Yeah, that's easy enough.
I'm not gonna.
Disturbing.
How was your 4th of July, partner? What'd you do?
Oh, it was so good. Woke up early, was on the golf course, Colorado Golf Club. No better place to play. And
what was your tee time?
Ended up playing at 9:20. Got the late hall pass from the wife. And
nice.
And so got out there and played some golf and then went to the pool. And,
nice. Family
with the
time
kids.
There?
Yeah, awesome. With the kids, family time there. Got in trouble with the lifeguard for going down head first on the slide, but that was okay.
You are
It was 4th of July and had some great barbecue.
Nice.
Okay. And then all of a sudden, it was such good weather, just was like me and a couple other guys. I said, well, let's go out and play a little bit more golf.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So we went out and played a little bit more golf, got 14 or 15 more holes in. And
wait. So you played 18 at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Then you went to the pool.
Yep.
And then you went back out and played another 15 holes.
Went to the pool and had a good time with the kids in the pool. Ate some great barbecue. Chef Bob throwing it down. And, yeah, they went back out and played some more golf and finished
good
when it
you.
Was dark.
Good for you.
Pitch dark. We finished. And
wire to wire.
Yeah, wire to wire.
What a day. Happy birthday, America.
That's right. How about you?
Man, had a low-key day. Hung out at the facility. We have a nice little pool set up. We just hung out down there, kind of low key, stayed home.
Did you grill anything or do any barbecuing?
What did
you grill? Ribs?
Ribs. We had ribs marinating overnight, sausages, burgers, salads.
That's the way to do it.
Happy birthday, America. And I was amazed how many people were wishing America the 2018th birthday yesterday on Twitter. It's like, no. That's what year it is. That's not how long America's been alive.
Right.
Do a Google search.
Yes.
Or something. I'm not going to ask you. I'm not going to ask
17,
you. 1776.
Yeah.
2018 minus 1776.
There we go.
And 242 maybe.
Yes. Right. We'll double check that now.
Man, did it ever happen quickly for Gary Kubiak? I got to take a dive quickly into this, but first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?